Hello, and welcome to Federalist Radio Hour. My name is Tristan Justice, and I'm a staff reporter for The Federalist. And joining me today is Thomas Spohr. He's the director of the Heritage Foundation's Center for National Defense. Prior to joining Heritage, Spohr served for more than 36 years in the U.S. Army, attaining the rank of lieutenant general. So the military is struggling with its recruitment goals. You've published some commentary with the Heritage Foundation this week outlining some of the challenges that are facing the military in terms of recruitment, with every branch struggling. You highlighted the Army in particular, though, falling 10,000 soldiers short of its planned strength by the end of the fiscal year, now only 2 months away, and it also failed to meet 50% of its recruiting goal of 60,000 soldiers. How bad are some of the other branches failing at meeting their recruiting goals?
Yeah, every branch of the military is having difficulty. Even those branches, services that have not struggled in the past, like the Marine Corps, they're having to turn out everybody to try and squeeze out and make their recruiting goals. I think the Army's going to have the worst of it. Maybe the next is the Air Force. The Navy is not sure whether they're going to make their goals, and the Marine Corps probably will. But every service is feeling this pain.
And what are some of the forces driving down this recruitment?
Yeah, Tristan, it starts with the labor market. Everybody knows the labor market's very hard. You know, restaurants and businesses are having difficulty hiring people, but that's not all of it. There's an ever-growing number of people that cannot qualify, for military service. Only 23% of Americans can qualify to serve the military. That number has been going down. As recently as 6 years ago, it was 29%. So that number's going down. And then there's this... what we see is a growing loss of confidence in the institution of the military, which is contributing to less Americans willing to join the military. So that all these forces coming together is kind of creating a perfect storm, if you will, of forces that are driving down recruiting numbers.
So you mentioned earlier that the Marine Corps might be on track to hit its recruiting goals. What's made the Marine Corps stand out among the other branches of the military in terms of recruitment?
Yeah, the Marine Corps has always had the reputation as an elite force, you know, the toughest to get into, the toughest to make the standards. And there's a group of Americans that's pretty consistent, and that appeals to them. And so that's not the group that enters the military for education, benefits, or pay. It's they're looking for a challenge, or they're looking to serve their country. Maybe they had a family member who was in the Marine Corps. That appeals to them. And that percentage of people, that group of people doesn't, you know, ebb and flow as the years goes on. It's pretty consistent. So they have that going for them.
So it's almost like a legacy program, you know, someone's father's in the Marines, so they join and so on.
Right, exactly. Or it's the perception they got from popular culture or something like that, that they wanted to be a Marine because they like the uniforms, or they like their reputation. So that, and that kind of endures, and it's kind of recession proof, if you will.
So I want to ask specifically about how the nation's overall declining health has kind of contributed to this decline in recruitment. We've spoken about this topic, you and I, before. There was a report that came out in 2018 that found of the 7 out of 10 Americans between the ages of 17 and 24 who are already disqualified from serving in the military, 31% were disqualified because of obesity. And those numbers have certainly not gotten any better. How is America's declining health, you know, really impacting the military today?
Yeah, so it's this population of people they can draw from is radically smaller. Only about roughly 1 in 4 Americans can meet these qualification standards without a waiver. And these qualification standards don't require you to be a lean, mean fighting machine. You know, the military specializes in taking people that are, you know, not terribly fit specimens and making them fit. The average individual loses 6% body fat in basic training. I mean, that's extraordinary. But even so, even being willing to take that, there are still people that can't qualify for physical fitness, obesity. I tell you, one of the big growing ones is youth mental health issues, that, you know, a lot of our youth are being prescribed fairly strong psychotropic drugs. And if you've taken those recently, that's a disqualifying element of trying to enlist in the military.
So, I mean, the outlook for recruitment, I mean, in terms of health, and is not an optimistic one. I was looking at the CDC latest data on obesity, and nearly 1 in 5 children now have BMIs of more than 30 and are considered medically obese. The Army requires BMI of those between 17 and 20 to be 25 or less. For soldiers, 26 or less, older than that, 26 or less. So, I mean, with these recruitment numbers struggling already, and with you know, even less and less fit people coming down the pipeline, I mean, is there room for a draft on the horizon?
Well, that's the dilemma. So if we were to call a draft, and I don't recommend that we do, but if we did, we would find that the vast majority of the people that showed up at the draft station wouldn't qualify, and we'd have to spend an extraordinary amount of time sifting through that pile to get to the people that actually do qualify. So this is a national public health crisis that nobody wants to talk about. You know, in some circles, you know, if you call somebody obese, it's shaming them, and we should be accepting. And, you know, I'm not about shaming people, but we have to realize that these people are putting their health in danger. We're creating a public health crisis that we can't even buy our way out of it. The long-term consequences are extraordinary. That there are answers.
There's been some criticism, and we talked about this too, within the military, actually reducing its physical standards to meet the public where it's already at. The Air Force now allows walking and modified push-ups in its revised fitness test. Do you think this type of criticism, is it warranted? Is military getting too soft in standards of fitness? Should it have to lower its standards since more and more Americans are less and less qualified?
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that they probably ought not to revise their standards. You know, warfare hasn't gotten any easier. It's no easier. It hasn't gotten easier to carry, you know, a 45-pound pack for 10 miles. And so we can't compromise on the standards for that reason, too. I think there's ways to help people get fit. And so the military's looking at that. They're looking at, how can we bring people in? Maybe not have the standards as tough at the start and then progressively get more difficult. And I think there's something to that idea. But, you know, where we start, when we start compromising, who knows where that ends, is my view.
Right. But and it's not just weight. There are a couple of studies that came out in recent weeks at the end of June and July. I want to bring up only 1 in 5 U.S. residents had, quote, optimal heart health based on standards from the American Heart Association. And then another just 1 in 7 had good cardiometabolic health. So, I mean, I'm almost, you know, wishing Michelle Obama would revive her Let's Move campaign from 10 years ago, because when you have, you know, 1 in 5 kids, not just overweight, but obese, I mean, this is just creating a national security crisis. It's getting worse and worse, and it's hurting our readiness.
Yeah. And, you know, the tragedy is nobody talks about it. You know, it's not discussed in circles. You know, one of the things like with COVID-19 that they found is that, you know, bad adverse outcomes are directly tied to obesity. You know, and so the worst, you know, the people that were obese really suffered the worst outcomes, but no one really wanted to talk about it in the public because they felt that was somehow embarrassing or shaming people that are obese. And it's just, you know, we have to have candid discussions on this topic, in my mind.
Right. And it just, at least in my perspective, it certainly seems like the culture has been shifting to this kind of like fat acceptance movement, where we're almost just kind of, you know, raise the right flag when it comes to this. You brought up COVID and how, you know, vast majority of those who had bad outcomes were overweight or obese. I want to know, all the CDC statistics predate COVID. They only run up to March 2020. Yeah, and I was looking through a study in the National Library of Medicine yesterday, actually, and showed, you know, 48% of American adults gained weight during the pandemic. Now the 34% reported remaining the same weight. So, you know, we're coming out of a pandemic with a virus that disproportionately hit obese and overweight people. And it just seems like the country's learned nothing on this.
No, I think you're right. You know, so I'm one of these guys that where there's, you know, I still see hope. I mean, there are towns, there are cities, there are counties, you know, where they have some dedicated individuals and they put a lot of time and effort into after school sports programs or healthy nutrition in schools, and they get good outcomes. So you know, we're not facing a law of physics. This is something that we can change, but it's going to take some effort on Americans' part.
So actually, I want to ask you about this. I, you know, as a proud alum of the Heritage Foundation's Young Leaders Program, when I was in the program back in 2018, there was this 5K fun run. You know, all the interns got together and did a fun run. Is that still active?
Yeah. We just did it last Thursday, 5K. It was like 90 degrees out there. We nearly melted, but we had a great run.
Amazing. But in terms of military readiness, physical readiness aside, do you think this kind of 21st century obsession with wokeness might be hurting military image? There was an interesting piece in American Greatness the other day from Victor Davis Hanson, where he talks about how this kind of obsession coming from the White House and now, going down through the Pentagon of military wokeness and, this withdrawal from Afghanistan that just went so horribly last year, that's impacted military image and that itself has impacted military recruitment.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I wish that wasn't the case. If you were to ask the Pentagon about wokeness, they would say something like, we don't know what you're talking about. But the reality is a lot of the programs that are being driven by the White House that end up in the Pentagon strike most Americans as woke, and so these diversity, equity, and inclusion agendas and training sessions or sessions which aren't labeled critical race theory, but have a lot of the principles within the class of critical race theory, that strikes Americans as wrong. Massive investments in climate change investments with Pentagon dollars, that rubs Americans the wrong way. And so a lot of the people that, influence young people to serve are ex-military veterans, influencers like teachers. They read about this stuff. And then when they're young, when their children or their nieces or nephews ask them about military service, the first thing that comes out of their mouth is not, you should join, but well, you should think about it, or maybe not right now, or something like that. So I think that is pushing down this propensity to serve on the part of our young people.
I just have to wonder if our overall obsession with wokeness has now kind of begun to take over the military. You've got, General Milley talking about white rage before Congress, just days before the Taliban are taking over Afghanistan. One of the things that comes to mind is military, the Army recruitment ad, where it's this animated video of this woman who talks about being raised by two moms in California. And then last year is contrasted with this Russian ad where you've got these, super built Russian figures jumping out of planes in Siberia. I wonder if this kind of obsession with wokeness has not just deflated the image of our military, but it's really undermined our notions of patriotism. And where, when you teach the country that it's irredeemably racist, built for the sole purpose to oppress, I think you're going to deflate motive for young people to, sign up and answer the call of duty. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, so that hurts the military. I will tell you that a lot of the things that, things do sneak in, like that commercial, that recruiting commercial you talked about, the animated one. I was talking to the Army leadership. That kind of snuck in without them even realizing it, kind of thing. They have since quashed that commercial, and I have it on good authority that the Army's going to go back to the theme of be all you can be, which was a winning theme from the Army, and they moved away from it. They're gonna go back to that. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes wokeness or themes that seem woke creep in, I think, because Army leadership isn't paying attention. And before they know it, they have delegated some element of command responsibility where it ought not to have been delegated. And some private company or private instructor in DEI or something else sneaks in and gives a class which sends all the wrong messages. And it only takes like one class or two classes for the word to get out, and that really strikes people as wrong. And so I'm not going to say that maybe some military leaders have not become woke, but I will tell you most of it comes in by accident, not by design, or it's being pushed by the White House, and that just goes over very poorly with Americans.
So, do you maintain confidence in the shape of our military? I mean, despite the recruitment woes and despite some of the misplaced focus that seems to be happening within the White House and the Pentagon, I mean, how confident are you in our military readiness to fend off a national emergency?
Yeah, right now our military is the best military in the world, and I don't just say that because I'm an alumni of it. It really is. We could take on any adversary, single adversary in the world, and probably defeat them. What worries me is the trajectory that the military's on, and so they've adopted a series of priorities, which and the top ones are not combat readiness. They're climate change, they're diversity and equity initiatives, which military leaders talk about first before they even want to talk about combat readiness. And so I think at this moment, we have a very strong military, but I worry that if we continue down this same path, that will not be the case in the future.
What do you make of this case that people sometimes throw out where, you know, physical ability is becoming irrelevant in the modern era, where so much of warfare is about drone use and airstrikes and things that can be done from remotely from miles and miles away that kind of make physical readiness not totally irrelevant, but not as relevant as it was maybe 50 years ago?
Yeah, I don't accept most of that. You know, even if you are at a desk, let's say in the mountain in Colorado Springs, and you're directing some space satellite or something like that, and you never even see the light of day, your ability to put in long hours, your resilience, you know, if you're not physically fit, if you don't have a strong system, you're not going to be able to deliver the kind of results that they need, you know, at the 11th hour, when the chips are down, and you can't hang, or you can't hang on your 24-hour shift. And so there's almost, you know, no situation where physical fitness cannot provide a military individual an advantage. And so, you know, if we start throwing that out, we'll have a bunch of people that, you know, can't last 6 hours on a shift or something else like that.
So to begin wrapping up here, what are some of the things the military could do to reverse some of these trends?
Yeah, one of the things that they're talking about right now, and I have written and I support this idea, is a form of prep school. And so let's say today that your body mass index, you know, exceeds the military standards. Well, rather than just, you know, tell you at the recruiter's station, we'll come back when you're at 25% or 26%. What they're talking about doing now is actually bringing these people into the military on a provisional basis. And you're in a, you know, a 90-day fitness weight loss regime where you're essentially exercising and eating healthily all the time, or maybe working on passing the qualification test called the ASVAB, and people are helping you work that. So we're not talking about teach the test, but help them meet the standards. That's one thing. That's the qualification part of this thing. Another thing we need to do is figure out what young people value. We've kind of figured out by now that they're not incentivized by massive enlistment bonuses, because if they were, they would be coming in because the Army's offering bonuses of up to $50,000. That's not bringing in. So we have to figure out what do young people value? And I think it's something different than what brought in previous generations. And then the other
thing, I'm sorry, you said yeah. $50,000, not 15, 50.
Yeah, 50, 50.
Wow.
I know. And so if that's not bringing in people, I don't think it's money. I think young people are looking for something else, and we need to figure out what that is. And then finally, we need to better connect the American citizen with its military. You know, there's some communities like Fayetteville, North Carolina, where everybody knows somebody in the Army. And then there's other communities like Minneapolis, where nobody knows anybody in the military. And we need to kind of equalize that out a little bit. We have to dispel. And, the consequence of this unfamiliarity with the military is that people have the weirdest ideas about the military, like you can't have a dog, or you can't have any hobbies, or, you know, all these kinds of urban myths, which are wrong. Or another urban myth is that, you know, if you join the military, you're going to come back with post-traumatic stress disorder, and you're going to come back broken. Whereas the reality is most people come out of the military stronger, better, more fit citizens.
Well, General, on that note, I admire your optimism, even despite all the headlines. And I appreciate you joining me today.
Absolutely, Tristan. Good talking to you.
Thank you.